We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game betting odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com to start winning.
Aaron Rodgers looking for Devontae Adams. He's got it! DJ Moore has a pass to the end zone. Jonathan Taylor, touchdown!
Hello everyone, welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and I'm joined as always by my co-host Sean Siegel, the co-owner of RotoViz. He's also the co-host of this show, the co-host of Stadium Bananas. He was also the co-drafter, co-manager of our FFPC best ball team that came second in the contest along with Blair Andrews. And on today's show, Sean, we are being joined by the man who outdid us, I guess we'll say, came one spot higher, is the champion, took home the top prize of $100,000. That is Connor O'Driscoll. And Connor, it was a real fun run over the last couple of weeks. Even before we got to the final stage, we had been, you know, talking a little bit about your team and how good it was going. And obviously it advanced to the finals and we were facing off against you. We talked about, you know, the dream scenario was a RotoViz 1-2, and obviously, the dream scenario for me and Sean and Blair was that we were number one.
But, yeah, my dream scenario was 1-2 with me ahead, and your dream scenario was 1-2 with you guys ahead.
Exactly, exactly. But it worked out in really, really a successful season in terms of best ball again for RotoViz. It was a really fun contest over at the FFPC. I will mention at the start, because I don't want to forget to do it, but if you aren't already following Connor on Twitter, you can follow him at DricoOut, which is DricoOut, well worth a follow. And obviously he can now brag that he has defeated us, you know, Sean, doing Stealing Bananas when I was editing it earlier today. Sean did go to the Talladega Nights, you know, saying, and that's something that I often joke about. I was joking about it with some people after it, but Sean put it out there that if you're not first, you're basically, you know, second place is the first loser. So there's only one first place in this, and that was Connor. So welcome to the RotoViz OT show, Connor, and congratulations on the victory.
Thank you so much. I've been a RotoViz subscriber for so long. Like, I think I forget the exact year, but almost a decade. I've been following you guys for so long. So it really is such an honor to be on here, and definitely a crazy scenario for me to be up against you guys in the final of the tournament, and to come out ahead. Just an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was super, and I was even talking to Connor yesterday when we were setting this up, and we were talking about, like, not only was it a RotoViz 1-2, but it's like, there's two Irish guys that are with RotoViz that are in those two teams. So it's a really unique, even more unique achievement with the Irish connections. But Sean, I know you talked about it in some of your articles over the last couple of weeks, and we've talked about it on the show, but this team was an absolute juggernaut from the very beginning. And we've mentioned that it missed out on Dalvin Cook over the last 2 weeks, basically, with no product. Like, you know, he wasn't
last
in the
starting 3 weeks. Last three weeks. Didn't use the score the last 3 weeks of the tournament.
And I know we were DMing back and forth, Connor, but the last 4 weeks, I believe, in terms of what you put up with the scoring as well.
So, yeah, last 4 weeks, it was 795 points. So more or less 200 points a week for 4 weeks straight. And I mean, that feels amazing, but it's also, obviously I'm so delighted to have won, but it's a weird feeling too, because I'm telling myself, I don't think I can ever draft a team that good ever again.
Well, Connor, it was an absolutely amazing team. And, you know, maybe the one silver line, well, there are multiple silver linings for us. I mean, the main thing was just to have RotoViz go 1-2. It was so exciting to have you there. And you're one of our favorite people. It's a blast to have you on the show today. I've been looking forward to this. Just very exciting. The other silver lining, of course, is just that your team was better. I mean, your team was absolutely unbelievable. You and I were talking a little bit yesterday. You have that near 200-point average. And that came without necessarily even a ton of contribution from the earliest drafted guys. Now, you got A.J. Brown back at a big moment. He put up huge points for you in week 16. That got you off to a great start and made, I think, the rest of that weekend a little bit less stressful, which is always nice. But you have a start here with Dalvin Cook, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown. Those three guys, during so much of the offseason, we have sort of discussed how that's one of the big advantages of drafting early, that you could actually get that trio of players. And in many cases, you could get, you know, Christian McCaffrey, who would be even better. Now, it didn't turn out that way since he was hurt, but how good did you feel coming out of the draft with those three? And then kind of what are your thoughts on it, that they actually weren't the players who carried you to the championship?
Yeah, it is funny. Yeah. Like we drafted those three, and we were at the 103 spot. So obviously we're happy to get Dalvin for off the 103. And then I actually can't remember the exact order now. I think it was AJ Brown in the second round. And then we're like, oh, these guys we're gonna get Justin Jefferson too. And that's just, anytime you can start a draft like that, it feels amazing. Because I don't even think that would be that common. So being able to start a draft in a unique way, a unique combination, and getting players that good, it was a great feeling. Really, really great feeling. And it definitely made us feel confident for the rest of the draft. But yeah, like you said, in the end, in the finals and in week 17, we from those three players combined, we only got 11.8 points. Now, that 11.8 from Justin Jefferson was obviously absolutely crucial. But I think you were saying this. It really goes to show, hey, it's not just the first three rounds. Literally every pick is crucial. You really have to have a plan for each pick and how it all fits in with the rest of your roster. And was really pleased with the structure. I think you've been very, very kind with your words in describing all the correct points we hit. And so to see it all come together at the literally the exact moment that we needed it was really nice.
And you mentioned it all coming together, and yet the one big thing that didn't work out for you in week 17 was not having Kirk Cousins. It was hard for us to watch Baker Mayfield on the final night with the way that he played, but within the context of your situation where the Vikings really kind of destroy the value of both Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson. I mean, Jefferson was absolutely huge this season. We had talked with Ben last night. I was mentioning that he was a wide receiver. He was a wide receiver three or worse only 16% of the time. Obviously, one of those weeks was the last week. It looked like you had it locked up, right? I mean, it looked like you guys were definitely going to win. What were your feelings as you watched that Vikings game? And kind of that combined with the Davante Adams game that pulled us back in a little bit. What was kind of going through your mind and your heart during that game?
If I'm being fully honest, and this is probably a bit of a mea culpa, at about 6 or 7 o'clock, so about roughly speaking, just after Deebo Samuels caught that, he caught a touchdown pass to put us over Muzio, I was like, okay, this is like a 99% thing. I can relax now. I can feel comfortable. And then I look again, And you guys had Rashad Penny go nuts. Noah Fant went nuts. And I was like, okay, I better reevaluate how I feel about this. Because then you obviously you had Davante Adams still to go and Jarvis Landry on Monday night as well. So I went in. I went into that game feeling pretty tense. And I'm watching the game, and I'm like, okay. So I know Sean Mannion isn't the best, but he still has to throw a lot of times to Justin Jefferson. So at the very least, hopefully I can get some PPR points there. They said that obviously the plan will be to rush a lot too. So that will go to Dalvin. The Green Bay defense is I guess. The talk was that, hey, they're not too strong against the run. But the thing about that is when that's all they really have to stop, like, that goes out the window. And then Davante Adams, he had the one big catch on the first drive. Then he did it again. And I'm like, oh, please just start running the ball. Please start running the ball. And so then he caught the touchdown. And in my head, I was like, okay, I don't think we're going to win this anymore. I think that's it. And then halftime hit. They went to the ground game. Even when they did throw it, they're throwing to other people. I think he only had two more catches. And Justin Jefferson, obviously, he picked up some garbage time points to bring him up. And then we got to use him in a score. And so it was a very, very topsy-turvy. And then... And then you look at the what you guys needed to win after that, 11.5 points from Jarvis Landry. I knew immediately, hey, that is literally the toss-up of all toss-ups. Like, that's literally, if you ask me sight unseen, what's his 50-50, it would be that. You look up any of the projections, that was his median. You look up the box scores, he it was about his average, and he hit it 50% of the time, and he missed it 50% of the time. So just very, very, it went from like pure elation to complete crash, I guess, back to being extremely nervous.
Yeah, we were on the opposite end, obviously, the whole way throughout it, but there was a point through the day. So like I had told my wife that we were in the final, these were some of the outcomes that could happen. And then like she came in a few times and she was saying, how's it going? And I was like, oh, there's one guy who we really love, but he's like not on our team and he's having like scoring a lot. And as I was telling her that, he caught the third touchdown. I was like, well, we're definitely not going to win now. So on the opposite side, kind of what was happening. And then we also had the situation where you mentioned the Deebo Samuel touchdown reception. And I was talking to Sean off air yesterday after we finished recording our show. And I was saying like the whole way through the day, I was kind of watching those five teams with Deebo. So I was kind of like, if Deebo doesn't score, we're in a good place. And then when that one went in, it felt like that was the final dagger, I guess, for us. But like you mentioned, there was a couple of players who did hit at the exact same time, and all of a sudden we were in the race. And even when it was going into the Packers game, it didn't feel like first place would have been attainable at that point, because like you said, you would still expect with, you know, the opportunities would come the way of Justin Jefferson or Dalvin Cook that they would get into your lineup and put up some points, and it felt like second place was probably where we were heading. But when it got to halftime, it was really within, you know, touching distance almost. And I did message you after that, you know, when the game finished and Justin Jefferson caught that, you know, pass after the Vikings had swapped quarterbacks, and it felt like that was like the difference, because you mentioned the 50-50 element of what Landry could do. That brought it from, I think, maybe 9.7 points to the 11.4. And that mightn't seem like a lot, but it was like, even it could have, if he hadn't caught that, imagine how close this game would have come down to when it finished 2.5
points. Oh, yeah, you guys would have been on the edge that entire time.
It would have been 0.7 roughly. So very, very close. And I was messaging Curtis Patrick at halftime of the game because he had Adams in his best ball tournament he was involved in as well. So we were kind of talking, we were like, they're going to start rushing the ball here. Like, they don't need to risk it. And kind of that is what happened. And yeah, but felt like we were nowhere near it, Sean. We got a dramatic surge, and then it was very, very close and went all the way down to Monday Night Football, which may have been one of the worst quarterback duo performances in Monday Night Football history, because it was pretty bad.
You guys can laugh about it, but That's a tough. I guess I could laugh about it now, but I was not happy.
Hey, RotoViz Radio listener, this is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to rotoviz.com, click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio21. That's RVRadio21, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package, is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
I would imagine our stress levels were high, Sean, but I can only imagine from kind of being in that comfort position of like it's right there for us, and then it starts to feel like sand going through your hands. It's slipping away. We can laugh about it now too, obviously, because you know it's done. There's not much point
right. in it.
But Ben did talk on Stealing Bananas about Sean's perspective and the positivity, and I think that has helped me kind of ease the pain as well. But I really enjoyed listening to Stealing Bananas on Wednesday, where Sean was kind of trying to add some pain to Ben's day to balance out our sorrows.
That's not really true, but it was, I was looking at kind of something else earlier today as I was getting ready for the show, and noticed I was in the expected points portion of the RotoViz Weekly Explorer and saw Jarvis Landry there at 17.7. And, you know, approximately 8 points under that in terms of negative FPOE. And it reinforces again those 10 targets, Baker Mayfield obviously not delivering them very well. Once we got to the point where it's just maybe one catch, and you're like, it's one catch for a lot of receivers. It's probably two catches for Jarvis Landry. But then, you know, once they get down there by the goal line, it's like, well, any catch in the end zone is obviously going to work. And so that part was, it was definitely edge of your seat excitement all the way, at least for us. Again, it just makes it so much easier because you won, Connor. We were just so excited for you. Take us through a little bit of the rest of that draft, right? So we had the first three picks. They were very good, but they actually didn't contribute a lot for you on some of these final weeks. But I mean, for anybody who hasn't seen this, I mean, this is a team with Deebo Samuel. It's a team with obviously Jamar Chase. It's a team with Mark Andrews. And Mark Andrews, because 11 of the 12 teams in the finals had him, wasn't necessarily the difference maker on the final week, but he was a huge part of getting there for most of the teams. Now, you scored so many points that it was maybe not quite as big a deal for you. But again, having that elite tight end, so valuable in best ball. You had Jalen Hurts. He was huge for the regular season. You had Joe Burrow. Obviously, having that Burrow-Chase pairing was gigantic for the last, you know, for the championship week. Obviously, very good at some points during the season. What were your objectives as you were going through these middle rounds? We talked on the site in a number of places about how this draft really was the perfect example. If you wanted to draft a team that hit like everything that we know from Mike Beer's best ball tools, from the best ball workshop, all of these things, I mean, this was just a perfect, it was a perfect team. I mean, you guys had this unbelievable draft. Is that how it felt as you were going through it? What were you trying to do as you built this team?
Yeah, it did really feel with every pick, me and my co-manager, Joey Zanetti, with every pick, it was like, oh, are we really going to be able to hit like this as this cleanly? So obviously, you guys have talked a lot about the need for volume at wide receiver. So we're obviously quite pleased to get to start with AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson. But like you guys always say, this isn't really zero RB. Or it wasn't at the draft. It ended up being in the playoffs, but it wasn't at the time of the draft. If you if it's not working for you, it's because you're not drafting enough. So we really, really wanted to hit on a high number of wide receivers that had the upside that we were looking for. I believe, I guess the other thing as well is one of the things that I tried really, really hard at in all my teams this offseason was to get the elite tight end. For me, really, Mark Andrews, he was the real cutoff point for me, and because he was somebody where like, okay, like clearly the talent level is there, clearly the target share is there. There's some questions about the volume, but in the fifth round, I'm willing to go for that upside, because I think that the level of confidence about what their run pass split and the amount of and the total available pass volume, I thought that was a little bit overconfident. And so he was one of my biggest tight ends that I was targeting. But obviously we wanted to take pit stops along the way. I think we had Mostert. I forget which round he was in. We were pleased to get him where we got him. But once we got him, we were like, okay, well, most of the really, really strong slam dunk quarterbacks are gone, and we were okay with that. But we need guys with upside. Jalen Hurts, he was a guy where the upside case was just so obvious. He rushes a lot. He's a young talent, and I guess the reason not to take him was seemingly so obvious. He people weren't sure whether he necessarily had the full time job. Or sorry, not the full-time job, whether he would have it for the full year. But I thought that in a tournament that's as top-heavy as this, that almost didn't matter, because that case it doesn't impact the expected value of the team. It's like, will this help us win the $100,000? And then on top of that, we had Joe Burrow. And I think it was also around the time where people were questioning, hey, is Joe Burrow okay? Because they were saying he was kind of turtling in training camp. He wasn't as aggressive. But it was just a situation where we didn't want to incorporate overconfidence as to how things would go. And we just wanted to take the talent at the price. And I guess the last point, and this is kind of funny, I had on my list, hey, I need to draft Sony Michel in the 18th, because there's a window here. And it was because of the podcast that you had done on chip chasing, where you said, hey, this is a guy where it looks like he might get traded. And if you're getting that in the 18th, he's barely getting drafted. So that means that if it does hit, you're differentiating yourself so much. And you've got the clear upside there, because he is talented. He was a first round pick for a reason, and so it's I guess it's funny how that worked out. it kind of looked like a, yeah, okay, we took the bet there, didn't really work out, and then all of a sudden, he becomes this monster for us. So that I guess that's the best I can kind of summarize the whole thing. It was probably a bit winding, but
what it sounds like there is, Sean, that we cost ourselves the first place by that Sony Michel.
I mean, I just have to keep that to myself. No, that's really cool. It's awesome that it worked out that way. I think that your logic behind taking him, because a lot of people aren't, and he's not going to be on many teams, that in addition to just what he scored, I mean, what he scored for you was awesome. For people who don't know, you mentioned how it turned into as your running back team. You ended up having Michel and Devin Singletary actually score a lot of points for you at the running back position the last couple of weeks.
Well, they're the only scores that we used week 15 through 17. Dalvin Cook there are people saying, yeah, so that's pretty much it turned into, because he didn't play week 16. And we were obviously disappointed when he went down. But I was saying to Joey at the time, hey, we didn't even use a score last week and we scored good points. Let's just hope for the same. And that was actually that the week he wasn't even able to play, he ended up being our highest scoring week, which is kind of funny.
And when I put out the zero RB watch earlier in the week, noted how those two guys they were the fantasy playoff MVPs. I mean, those guys, along with Rashad Penny, who was the driver for our team, really came through there. Another thing in terms of putting your team together with Chase and with Burrow, you also had Tyler Boyd, and he scores a touchdown in week 17 that makes the difference. When that happened, I was watching with family. I was like, he's on several of the teams that plays against us, but Connor's team is going to score so many points. That's not going to be the difference. He's just got too many weapons. That won't even factor into his lineup. But then that touchdown was the key.
Yeah, that did make a big difference. And I felt the same way. Hey, it's nice to have that floor at that flex spot. That feels good, especially with the amount of points we're getting from Chase. And like you said, we still had AJ Brown in play that stage. We still had Debo Samuels to go, who did help. We still had Justin Jefferson to go. And I guess one of the things that did make the team as strong as it was, aside from those guys, we also had Gabriel Davis, who I think halfway through the second quarter, he had four catches for 30-something yards. And I was like, okay, he's heavily involved. He's going to score. He could score a touchdown. They're trying a lot. And then Josh Palmer, who has worked himself into, into the target distribution there. But yeah, I felt the same way that, like, hey, even if these top heavy guys don't get there, it feels good having these guys who are later in the draft, and they could help us too, but they didn't.
Luckily, though, at the end, you didn't need all those guys. One other key, you mentioned there, so the way in terms of the draft, some of the guys that it might have felt like you were getting, guys maybe sliding a little bit further than they should. That's another pretty cool thing about the format of this contest. And a lot of the best ball contests is you're drafting in those 12-team leagues. So depending on how the other players in the room are set up, it can kind of change some of the ADP slightly. You also mentioned about there was a number of times this offseason where certain news helped players slide. So we actually were the beneficiaries of Jonathan Taylor at the 12th spot in our draft. And obviously things did move around from early in the season to late in the season. Similarly, like you mentioned with Burrow, and I'm not sure when you were drafting this team, but it may have been like Chase obviously had the issues in the preseason and he was sliding down draft boards. So there was lots of little changes like that changed ADP. But a number of the leagues, and we did a show a couple of weeks back where we talked about would we change anything. It was actually, I think, maybe the show with Mike Leone last week, but we talked about we probably wouldn't change anything in our overall structure and the draft, and that was because we picked at spot 12 and any of the players we would have looked to take would have been going in that kind of early part of the next round. So we were going to have to go quite a bit ahead of ADP on those players. So it's interesting then when you're drafting from the tree spot, maybe some of that stuff did work into your team to help get those superstars maybe three or four slots later than you would have. I know me and Sean looking through our roster, there were certain points where we maybe were two spots too late to get those guys, but we were drafting at the back end of the round.
Yeah, I think I know there's been lots of stuff on the site about when you should do the timing of your draft. And I think that one interesting way to look at it is in terms of like the information flow. Like at the start of the off season, you basically have no information flow. And so you've got really nothing to analyze. You've just got all of these total uncertain situations, and you want to try and think about, hey, how do I draft teams that can best take advantage of that? And then later in the off season, I think that it's like there's just this complete overload, and it becomes very, very difficult to track everything. And then it also becomes much more difficult to like objectively analyze things, because it's all kind of like it's coming so thick and fast that I think you get more kind of quick instinctive reactions to it, such as like the Deshaun Watson trade rumors to the Eagles. I think if you were to like look at that like fully objectively, I think most people would say that shouldn't really impact it, but there was just so much. And I think that helps a lot. That sort of thing helps a lot later in the draft season, whereas kind of like in the middle, you kind of like you get this kind of steady trickle. And so each individual piece is just that much easier to analyze. Like, for example, when Cam Akers went down, the kind of like draft community had so long to kind of like think through that it was going to be much easier to come to some kind of like most optimal, most logical conclusion, where it gets a lot harder when there's like 10 things like that happen at once.
You obviously put together this fantastic team. You know, we talked about what we would do differently or not. Your team here, you mentioned Mostert. He was in a situation where there was an injury, but overall your team stayed fairly healthy. Obviously, you don't know when you pick that he's going to get hurt. That was an excellent selection. If he hadn't gotten hurt, he would have played very well. This was the perfect team. You come through, you win. Is there anything you feel like you learned from all of this? If you're going to try now and win again, and I assume you'll try to defend, I mean, obviously it's going to be tough, but you're going to try and defend your title. What advice would you give to drafters in order to be so good in 2022?
I think the biggest thing for me, well, like, I guess one strategy I just mentioned, but the biggest thing for me that I learned from this whole kind of year and whole experience was that you need to be a little bit nihilistic about player picks, and be more rigid about trying to hit the principles and get the pricing right and the structure right. I think that is probably the biggest thing, because if you look at this team at any other than the final, let's say, final 2 weeks. If you look at it at other individual points in time, you might say, oh, hey, these were terrible picks. Like, for most of the season, AJ Brown given the results, was a terrible pick. You could say the same for a lot of the season with Dalvin Cook. You could say the same for a lot of the season with Joe Burrow. A lot of these players were, at some points, they weren't that good. But because we got the structure right, and obviously we were quite lucky with how things turned out, but because of the structure, we were able to carry through those rough periods. We were able to carry through points in time when top draft picks, guys that we felt really confident in, weren't performing that well. So I think the biggest thing is that structure. And then I think another thing that we did that I think was underused in this set of playoff year and probably won't be as much next year, is looking at game stacks within the playoffs. So one example of that, so I had another team that unfortunately didn't advance past week 14, but it almost did, and it heavily game stacked the Cincinnati and San Francisco game. And because And one key thing that if it weren't for James Conner going monster at the end, it would have advanced. And one reason for that would have been that game went to overtime, the San Francisco and Bengals game. And that got us the extra points from Burrow, extra points from Kittle. And so having those different game stacks throughout week 14, 15, whatever the playoff weeks are, and not just week set, not just the final week, having that is it's a really good way to build correlation in without having to sacrifice too much in terms of ADP, because you get the 3 weeks or the 4 weeks in this case to really build that correlation in, so you're never having to reach too far.
It's going to be fun. Me and Sean talked on Tuesday's show, and we've teased it a few times. Zachary Kruger and me did a best ball show last year, and we're looking forward to diving into that probably pretty soon, probably very early in the next month or so. And then Sean obviously over the best ball workshop up on the site and the tools. I think something like this, it's amazing. Sometimes you want to have that break away from it, and other times it just gives you that enthusiasm to jump straight back into it. So I'm sure you have that enthusiasm to dive right back into the best ball drafting once we have those opportunities. But I'm very excited myself as well, and very excited for you to come out and win the tournament itself. I did have a look on Twitter earlier. I did see Sean's obviously not using his Twitter account, but Connor has updated his profile to say 2021 FFPC best ball tournament champion, and he also has I don't know which one of the touchdowns it is particularly, but the first one, Jamar Chase is heading to the end zone against the Chiefs. So congratulations again, Connor, and as I mentioned at the start of the show, you can follow Connor on Twitter at Draco Out, which is DRICO and then the word out. As always, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get yourself a discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. You can head over to rotoviz.com/podcast for additional information. The promo code currently is still back in 2021, so it is RV Radio 2021. We will be updating that code shortly. We do have that bonus offer on, so make sure you head on over and get access and get yourself set up for the 2022 season. We will be back with another show on Saturday that will be coming your way. Make sure you subscribe to the RotoViz Overtime podcast feed. And of course, my name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out all Sean's work up at rotoviz.com. And until we're back with another show, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.